and though his dear friend had died as he would have chosen, not only having found Gauntlegrim, but saving it from total destruction. The profound pain launched Drizzt back to another time and another place, when he had watched Caddybri and Regis melt through Mithril Hall's solid wall on the back of a spiritual unicorn, gone to Myleki's rest. He had never thought he could feel such pain again. He was wrong. Across the way, some dwarves stumbled into the room. Stokely Silverstream and Torgar Hammerstriker spotted Drizzt and Dahlia and began calling out as more of their brethren entered the chamber. Dahlia let her hand slip from Drizzt's back, coming to his side where she grasped his hand.
"Shoot an arrow, and let us be gone from here," she whispered.
In a dark, dark place, Jarlaxle Bayenry opened his eyes and dared bring forth a bit of light. He could hear the rush of water and knew what it meant, and he heard Athrogate stirring beside him. He saw his elemental, the last of the ten, the one that had not been set in place, still standing guard at the entrance of the portable hole he had used to pull himself and Athrogate away from the primordial. That creature of the elemental plane of water seemed diminished, no doubt from holding back the fires of destruction, and Jarlaxle sensed that it was agitated as well, eager and frustrated all at once. "I release you," the drow said. And just that easily the elemental leaped out of the hole and into the sidelong swirl of the enchanted water. The drow slipped a ring onto a finger, adjusted his eye patch, and left his body in a spell of clairvoyance, seeking answers, which he found, as soon as his vision lifted out of the pit. He saw Drizzt and Dahlia, and the dwarves across the way, and still forms lying under the archway. Jarlaxle turned to Athrogate, who lay broken, his skin blistered, one leg shattered beneath his prone form.
"It's time to go," Jarlaxle whispered to him, and the drow produced another ring, a teleportation device that would send them home.
"I ain't to make it," Athrogate whispered back, barely able to draw breath.
Jarlaxle smiled at him. "My priests will find us in Luskan. They will tend you, my friend. Now is not your time to die. Your kind has lost enough today."
He began to enact his magic, but Athrogate grabbed him roughly by the arm, commanding his attention.
"Ye could have left me," he snarled.
Jarlaxle just nodded and smiled, and started to chant once more, but again, Athrogate interrupted.
"Wait," the dwarf begged. "Is it done? Did King Brunner win the day?"
Jarlaxle smiled warmly, a hint of a tear in his crimson eyes.
"Long live the king," he assured his bearded friend. "Long live King Brunner."
They buried Brunner Battlehammer, eighth king of Mithril Hall, under rocks beside the cairn of Thibbledorf Puent. They buried him with his one-horned helm, with his enchanted shield and his mighty, many-notched axe. For what dwarf other than Brunner Battlehammer would deserve such weapons? There had been talk of bringing Brunner home to Mithril Hall for burial. Stokely had even suggested Kelvin's cairn in Icewind Dale as an appropriate resting place. But Gauntlegrim, the most hallowed and ancient of Delzoon halls, somehow seemed more fitting. So they buried their heroes, and there were many that fateful day, and they took their tour of what remained of ancient Gauntlegrim. Outside the main wall, in the vast cavern with the pond, they said their farewells. Both Stokely and Torgar offered Drizzt a home, Icewind Dale or Mirabar. But he refused them, without even giving any real thought to their offers. Neither place was for him, he knew, nor was Mithril Hall. Nor was anywhere, it seemed. When he at last exited the tunnels east of the mountains, Gwynevar beside him, Drizzt Do'Urden turned to stare to the north, toward Icewind Dale, the place that had been his truest home,
the place where he had known his truest friends. And he was alone.
"Where's your road lead, Drow?"
Dalia said, walking up beside him. Winnevar favored her with a low purr.
"Where is yours?" he asked in return.
"Oh, I mean to finish this with Sylora Somm, don't you doubt that?"
the elf warrior promised without the slightest hesitation. "To Neverwinter Wood for me. I will tell the witch to her face that her dread ring has failed, that her beast is trapped once more. I will tell her that right before I kill her."
Drizzt considered the declaration for a few moments, then corrected. "Before we kill her."
Dalia stared at him with a grin that told that was exactly what she wanted to hear. Drizzt looked her over, head to toe, and he realized only then that she had moved the last diamond stud out of her right ear and set it in her left. There was a story there. There were many stories in the memories and the heart of that most curious elf. He wanted to hear them all.
Brunner Battlehammer pulled himself up to his elbows, opened his eyes, and shook his head to clear his jumbled thoughts. He only became more confused, though, when he noted his surroundings, a springtime forest and not the dark halls of Gontalgrim.
"Eh?"
he muttered, as he hopped to his feet with energy and youth he hadn't known in centuries.
"Puent," he called. "Drizzt?"
"Well met," said a voice behind him, and he spun to see Regis standing there, looking in the prime of health and life, with a grin from ear to ear.
"Rumblebelly?"
Brunner managed to gasp. He stuttered as he tried to continue, when from out of a door in a small house behind Regis stepped another. Brunner's jaw fell limp, and he didn't even try to speak. His eyes welled with tears, for there stood his boy, Wulfgar, a young man once more, tall and strong.
"You mentioned Puent," Regis said. "Were you with him when you fell?"
Those last words hit the dwarf like a thrown stone, for indeed, he had fallen. Indeed, he was dead. And so were the two before him, in a place that so confused him, even more, for surely it was not the halls of Moradin.
"Thibbledorf Puent is with Moradin now," Brunner said, more to himself than to the others. "Got to be. But why ain't meself?"
He hardly noticed the growing sound of music behind him. But when he looked up, he saw Wulfgar looking past him, an enchanted expression on his face. Regis, too, stared over Brunner's shoulder. The halfling motioned with his chin, and Brunner glanced around. His gaze went across a small and still pond to the trees across the way. And there she danced, his beloved daughter, dressed in a layered white gown of many folds and pretty lace, and with a black cape trailing her every twist and turn.
"By the gods,"
the dwarf muttered, so completely overwhelmed. For the first time in his long life, and his long life was no more, Brunner Battlehammer fell to his knees, was literally knocked from his feet by overwhelming emotion. He put his face in his hands, and he began to sob. And they were tears of joy, tears of just rewards.
This book is over, but the story continues. Keep listening after the credits to hear the beginning of Neverwinter, Neverwinter Saga, Book 2. Book 24 in the Legend of Drizzt series free.
This has been an Audible Frontiers production of Gontalgrim, written by R.A. Salvatore, narrated by Victor Bevine, producer Mike Charzik. Copyright 2011 by Wizards of the Coast, LLC. Production copyright 2012 by Audible, Inc.
And now a free preview of Neverwinter, Neverwinter Saga Book 2. Book 24 in the Legend of Drizzt series.
Prologue. The Year of the Reborn Hero, 1463, DR. Dahlia's lips curled into a smile as she watched the dark elf dance. Stripped to the waist, Drizzt Do'Urden moved through his attack and defense routines, sometimes slowly and sometimes with blinding speed. His scimitar spun gracefully, deceptively delicate, then darted with sudden, straightforward power. They could strike from any tangent, stabbing often at unexpected angles, and more than once, Dahlia found herself startled and blinking at a clever twist or turn. She had fought beside Drizzt on the road to Gontalgrim and inside the dwarven complex, so she thought she had come to understand the extent of his martial prowess. But now, on this moonlit night, she could truly appreciate the grace and coordination of his movements, and reminded herself that such perfection in battle didn't come easily. She marveled at the drow at work, at his slim form, his tight muscles so apparent and so appealing. He was always on the balls of his feet, never on his heels, she noted, and his every turn ended in alignment and balance. She noted, too, that Drizzt's neck did not strain with his sudden stabs and swings. So many lumbering human warriors kept all their power up high, above their shoulders, and so their strength seemed to increase in proportion to the decrease of their balance and swiftness. But not Drizzt. His neck was loose, his shoulders nimble. His strength came from his belly and the muscles lining the sides of his ribs. How many opponents, Dahlia wondered, had been comforted by the drow's slim neck and flat shoulders, by his apparent lack of strength, only to have their weapons smacked from their hands or cut in half by the power of his blows. His blades hummed with amazing speed as he fell deeper into his dance, but weight, balance, and strength hid behind every cut and thrust. Dahlia's hand instinctively went up to her right ear, empty now of diamond studs, and her smile widened further. Had she at last found the lover who would end her pain? Drizzt was sweating, his dark skin glistening in the moonlight. He stabbed out to the right with both blades in a parallel thrust, but deftly turned his feet opposite the attack and flashed away to the left, using his upper body turn to gain momentum for a somersault, one that landed him back on his feet. A mere heartbeat later, he slid down to his knees, as if forced low by some imaginary blade coming in from the right. A blue-glowing scimitar stabbed up that way. Then Drizzt was moving again, back on his feet so smoothly, Dahlia hadn't even noticed the transition. The elf woman licked her smiling lips.
"I can ride him," Dahlia insisted. "I'm a skilled horseman."
"Andahar isn't a horse," Drizzt replied from his seat on the unicorn's back. The drow reached down to offer his hand to Dahlia once more. Still she resisted.
"Or are you afraid that Andahar will come to prefer me?" she replied.
"It wouldn't matter. I have the whistle."
"I could take that whistle."
"You could try." With that, Drizzt retracted his hand, shrugged, and clucked softly, starting Andahar into a slow trot. They had only gone a single stride, though, before Dahlia planted the end of her 8-foot staff and vaulted up onto the unicorn's back behind the drow.
"Why do you think I need your hand, drow?" she asked. "Why do you believe I need anything from you?"
Drizzt kicked the mighty steed into a faster canter, tugging Andahar's flowing white mane around to steer the unicorn through the brush. "We'll break early for a midday meal and make the road soon after," Drizzt said.
"And then?"
"North," Drizzt answered. "To Port Last, perhaps Luskin, to learn what we may." From his tone and posture, it was obvious he expected an argument. Dahlia had expressed her eagerness to go south to Neverwinter Wood, where she could be rid of the Thayan wizard Sylora Somm and her dread ring. Surprisingly, though, Dahlia didn't object.
"Luskin, then,"
she agreed.
"But with all speed, then just as fast back to the south." I let Silora Sam gnash her teeth in dismay over the failure of the primordial, but not for long.
And then we'll kill her, Drizzt said, as much a question as a statement.
Second thoughts? Dahlia asked.
Drizzt steered Andahar toward a copse of trees then, and brought the unicorn back to a slow trot. I said I wouldn't join you in a quest merely for revenge.
Silora isn't finished here, Dahlia said. She will seek to again free the primordial, raining catastrophe on the north to fuel her dread ring. And you think all I seek is revenge.
Drizzt pulled Andahar to a sudden stop and slowly looked back to stare straight into Dahlia's blue eyes. I said that if it was no more than your personal quest for revenge, I wouldn't join you. Dahlia grinned at him, the movement causing the intricate blue and purple dots of the woad on her face to form the hint of an image of a hunting cat poised to strike. Drizzt couldn't miss it, and his expression reflected his intrigue. Dahlia tilted her head to the right, then swayed it back left, and the drow blinked in amazement. In the woman's movement, the cat seemed to spring. And with Drizzt still obviously mesmerized, Dahlia leaned forward and brushed his lips with her own. It took several heartbeats, but that at last seemed to break the spell, and the dark elf leaned away from her, staring at her with puzzlement. "Why did you do that?" he asked, in a voice that seemed hard to find.
"Because I don't believe you," she replied.
Drizzt cocked his head curiously, and when he started to protest, Dahlia put a finger over his lips to silence him.
"Don't be a fool, drow," she said with a wicked grin. "Don't deny me my fantasy out of some chivalrous notion of the importance of truth."
Drizzt just looked confused, and that made Dahlia laugh aloud at him. Finally, he surrendered and turned back, urging Andahar into motion once more. Andahar didn't tire through the rest of the day and long into the night. Unlike Guinevar, the magical unicorn could be summoned at any time and could remain for as long as Drizzt needed him. But also, unlike the panther, Andahar could be wounded, if not outright slain, and such wounds would take as long to heal as those of a mortal creature. So Drizzt took care to involve Andahar in as few battles as necessary, and only rarely kept the unicorn around when danger was afoot. They had hoped to make port last that night, but the weather turned foul and it was not to be. They set their camp under an overhang of rock on a high bluff some distance from the road, but in sight of it. Chill rain poured down, and an occasional streak of lightning split the sky. Drizzt managed to get a campfire burning, though it stayed low and sputtering. Whenever the wind swirled, both he and Dahlia found themselves coughing in the smoke. But still, it was not so bad for Drizzt. How could it be? He was on the road again, and with the promise of adventure awaiting him at every turn. The road was filled with danger, the forests of wild things, and the land untamed. Even the cities ahead, first Port Last, then Luskan, would keep him on his edge, would keep his hands in easy reach of his blades. He sat with his back against the stone and stole glances at Dahlia as she ate, as she paced, as she stretched her road-weary muscles. She was out near the front edge of the overhang, her back to him, the swirls of rain catching her just a bit. She stood on her toes and peered into the distance, her diagonally cut skirt riding up high and affording Drizzt a long look at her shapely legs. The drow smiled and shook his head. She knew he was watching her. Dahlia played a game, like the kiss when she sat behind him on Andahar, or the way in which she'd wrapped her arms around him for the hard ride.
"Douse the fire." Dahlia glanced at him over her shoulder.
Drizzt's smile disappeared, and he stared at her curiously.
"We're not alone."
With a single slide of his boot, Drizzt pushed a mound of dirt that had been strategically placed for just this purpose and killed the flames. He scrambled to his feet and stared into the rain, but saw nothing. Dahlia reached her arm out in front of him and guided his gaze.
A torch's glow flickered from behind distant trees, down along the road.
"They're moving," Dahlia said.
"Along the road at night in this deluge?"
"Highwaymen, or soldiers of some warlord or another," Dahlia reasoned. "Or some monstrous group, perhaps.
Perhaps it's only a merchant caravan seeking shelter." Dahlia shook her head.
"What merchant would so imperil his wagon or his team by moving along a muddy and unstable road in the dark? If he broke a wheel or hobbled his horse, it would likely prove fatal."
"Unless they're fleeing from trouble already found," said Drizzt, and he scooped up his weapon belt.
"You intend to go out to them?"
Dahlia asked, in an almost mocking tone. Drizzt looked at her as if the answer was, or should be, obvious.
"To right all the wrongs of the world, Drizzt Do'Urden?" she asked. "Is that your purpose for being? Is that the only motivation that drives you?"
"You would not aid a helpless innocent."
"I don't know. And I highly doubt that's what we see on the road below,"
Dahlia countered. She gave a little laugh, and Drizzt knew he was being mocked.
"That's all there is for you? Black and white, right and wrong?"
"There's a profound difference between right and wrong," Drizzt replied grimly, and he strapped on his weapons.
"Of course, but isn't there more to the world?"
Drizzt paused, but only for a heartbeat, before he produced the onyx feline figurine and called Guinevere to his side. "A light on the road," he explained to the panther. "Find it, watch it." With a low growl, the panther leaped away, disappearing into the night.
"Don't you believe that there are instances where both sides believe they're right?"
"Remind me to tell you the tale of King Obuld Many-Arrows someday," Drizzt replied and walked past Dahlia. "For now, I'm going to learn what I may. Are you joining me?" Dahlia shrugged.
"Of course," she replied. "Perhaps we'll find a good fight."
"Perhaps we'll rescue an innocent merchant," Drizzt countered.
"Perhaps we'll rescue the ill-gotten booty from an undeserving, self-appointed lord," Dahlia said as soon as the drow turned away.
Drizzt didn't look back at her. He didn't want her to see the unintentional grin her unrelenting sarcasm had brought to his face. He didn't want to give her that satisfaction. He moved swiftly down the rise and into the trees, pushing himself hard because he wanted to push Dahlia even harder. With his magical anklet speeding his stride, he knew she couldn't pace him, so every now and then he slowed, just enough to make her think she was catching up. Long before he neared the road, however, he was only guessing as to how far behind Dahlia might be, if she was still behind him at all. Drizzt forced his focus in front of him, to the road and the torches down to his right, approaching quickly. He nodded in recognition as a wagon came into view, driven hard by an obviously flummoxed man. His companion crouched beside him, bow drawn, looking behind over the back of the bench seat. Behind the wagon came three other torches, all carried by men running hard to catch up. No, not to catch up, Drizzt realized, but to keep up. They were not the enemies from which the wagon fled. If that had been the case, then surely the archer would have had little trouble in knocking them down. Barely 30 yards away, one of the trailing torch carriers went down.
"Shoot them! Shoot them!"
another of the trailing runners, a woman, shouted desperately. Drizzt's hand went to Talmaril, his bow. He gave a little whistle, one Guinevere knew, and the panther revealed herself on a tree branch across the road from him. Drizzt motioned to the path of the oncoming wagon. Out leaped the panther to the middle of the road to face the approaching wagon. The horse team started to veer. Guinevere roared, like the rumble of boulders, the sheer strength of that call echoing throughout the forests and hills for a league. The horses skidded to a stop, rearing and neighing and kicking their forelegs in terror. The jolt almost knocked the archer from the bench seat. "Shoot it!" the driver yelled, working furiously to control the shuddering wagon. "Shoot it dead, oh by the gods!" The archer managed to swing around, his eyes going wide as he spotted the source of the roar. He brought his bow up, his hands shaking. A streak of silver, like a small bolt of lightning, cut the air right in front of the two men, startling them further, so much so that the arrow slipped from the bowstring.
Oblivious to the disarmament, the archer let fly and the arrow tumbled harmlessly. The man shrieked and the bow jumped, nearly tumbling from his grasp. The horses continued to rear and whinny, even after the panther jumped back into the brush, disappearing from sight. "Bowman to the side!" yelled one of the trailing runners, at last nearing the wagon, and both she and her companion veered Drizzt's way in a brave charge. He wasn't going to shoot them dead, of course, for he still had no idea if these were friends or foes, so he dropped Talmaril to the ground and drew forth his blades defensively. He needn't have bothered. The nearest attacker, a tall and gangly man still many strides from Drizzt, gave a howl and lifted his sword up over his head. Then a lithe elf form swung down agilely from the branch above, her legs hooked and secure. With the momentum of the movement, Dahlia smacked the charging man on the forehead with her long staff and sent him to the ground, his sword flying away. Dahlia came forward, letting go with her legs to spin down in a landing so balanced that it seemed somehow casual. Even as she touched down, she gracefully sprang right over the sitting and dazed man. The woman, just a couple of strides ahead, tried to get her spear in line, but Dahlia slipped down low as she swept past her, her staff sweeping in to take the woman's feet out from under her. Back on the road, the archer cried for the driver to ride on, but just as the horses began to run, Guinevere leaped into the middle of the road and roared again. The terrified team reared and shrieked in protest. From the edge of the road, Drizzt noted the third of the trailing runners, the one who had gone down hard, stumbling in the darkness, his torch sputtering in the rain far behind on the road. Drizzt paid him no heed and sprinted for the wagon, which had gone past him to his left. Though it was no longer moving, Drizzt saw the archer come up facing him, bow reset and drawn. Drizzt dropped to his knees, sliding across the mud as the arrow went harmlessly above him. He came up right behind the wagon bed and leaped high with his momentum, easily clearing the low tailgate. As soon as he set his feet firmly, he leaped again, tucking his legs to clear the bench and the ducking drivers, and turning as he went so he landed at the base of the yoke, facing the two men. The team continued to rear and struggle, but the jostling didn't bother the agile drow at all. He held his scimitars level in front of the faces of his captives.
"Take it all, but don't ye kill me, I beg!"
the driver desperately pleaded, his open palms waving and shaking up beside his wide, wet face.
"Please, good sir!"
The other man dropped his bow, covered his face with his hands, and began to weep.
"Who is chasing you?" Drizzt asked the drivers.
They seemed flummoxed by the unexpected question.
"Who?" Drizzt demanded.
"Highwaymen," said the archer. "A foul band of ne'er-do-wells, thinking to steal our goods and cut our throats."
Drizzt looked at Dahlia, who had come out on the road to face down the third runner, who stood with his hands up in surrender, obviously wanting no part of a fight with her.
"Who are you and where are you from?" Drizzt asked.
"Port Last," answered the archer.
At the same time the driver said,
"Luskin."
Drizzt eyed them suspiciously.
"Out of Luskin, but coming back on our way through Port Last," the archer explained.
"Commissioned by the High Captains,"
the driver quickly added, and he seemed to gain some confidence.
"Carrying?"
"Food, wine, goods,"
the driver said. But the archer tried to halt him, putting his hand out across the man's chest.
"Carrying what we're carrying, and what business is it of your own?" the archer asked.
Drizzt grinned at him wickedly, and the man seemed to deflate, perhaps reminded that the High Captains wouldn't offer him much of a defense against a simple thrust of the scimitar that hovered barely a hand's breadth from his face. A ruckus farther down the road indicated that the pursuit was nearing.
"If I find you're lying to me, then know we will meet again long before you see the lights of Port Last."
Drizzt withdrew his blades and flipped them over before neatly sliding them back into their scabbards.
"Now be gone."
He tipped a salute and leaped between the men over the back of the bench. He helped the three stragglers up into the wagon, then watched as it sped on its way.
"Letting them go?" Dahlia came up beside him. "How noble of you."
She handed him Talmaril and the quiver Drizzt had dropped before his charge at the wagon.
"Would you have me steal their goods and slay them?"
"The first, at least."
Drizzt stared at her. "They're simple merchants."
"Yes, from Luskin, I heard.
simple men in the employ of the high captains, pirates one and all, and they who destroyed that city.
Drizzt tried to hold steady against that truth, a truth that he, who had been in the city of Sails during the fall of his dear friend Captain Dudermont, knew all too well and all too painfully.
So what they're carrying is ill-gotten from the start, then. And which highwayman is which, Drizzt Do'Urden? Said Dahlia.
You twist everything to suit your conclusions.
Or everything is twisted to begin with, and few are what they seem, and a good man does evil, and a beggar is a thief.
More noise sounded from down the road. We'll finish this discussion later, Drizzt said, and he motioned for Guinevere to take a position in the brush.
To no conclusion that will satisfy the idealist drow, Dahlia assured him, and she too sprinted off into the brush at the side of the road. Drizzt thought to follow, but the sound of galloping horses and Dahlia's words stabbing at his thoughts changed his mind. He lifted his bow, setting an arrow and leveling it.
A quartet of riders came into view a moment later, tightly grouped and leaning low against the driving rain. Drizzt drew back, thinking he could strike down two with a single shot, for it would take more than a man's girth to halt a bolt from Tolmeril.
"Beggar man or thief?" he whispered. The riders neared, and one held a sword up high.
Drizzt dipped the angle of the bow and let fly. A sizzling blue-white flash rent the air, momentarily stealing the night, and the arrow burrowed into the road in front of the drivers, blasting through cobblestone and dirt with a thunderous report. The horses reared and bucked. One rider went tumbling and hung desperately from the side of the saddle. The other two fared better, until Dahlia came soaring out of the trees to the side. Her staff clipped one hard as she stretched out and double-kicked the other. And then came Guinevere, and the horses spun and bucked and reared in terror. Dahlia hit the ground with a twist and roll, came right back to her feet and swung around. She planted her staff to vault up high once more, this time kicking the female rider she had struck with her staff. To the woman's credit, she still held her seat, but Dahlia wasn't done with her. As she landed, the elf whipped her staff out to strike the rider again, and this time sent a magical burst of lightning through the metal pole. Shaking uncontrollably, her hair dancing, her limbs waving wildly, the woman had no chance of remaining on her turning, terrified horse, and down she tumbled. Three of the horses rushed away, riderless. Guinevere kept the fourth turning and turning, the poor rider hanging onto the side.
"More are coming," Dahlia called to Drizzt when he joined her above the three prone highwaymen, his scimitars informing too that they would be wise to lie still.
"But don't ye kill me, Master Do'Urden," one middle-aged man whimpered. "Be sure that I ain't no enemy of yours."
Drizzt looked at him with puzzlement, not recognizing the man at all.
"You know him?"
Dahlia asked. Drizzt shook his head and demanded of the man,
"How do you know my name?"
"Just a guess, good sir," the man cried. "The cat, the lightning bow, the blades ye carry."
"Gwen," Drizzt called.
Off to the side, the panther was getting a bit carried away with her game and had the poor horse spinning furiously. As the panther backed off and the horse stopped its spinning, only then did the dizzy highwayman fall to the ground.
"You're Drizzt?"
the fallen woman asked, her teeth still chattering from the residual lightning. "That a highwayman would find that a comforting possibility perplexes me," the drow replied. The woman gave a snort and shook her head.
"They have friends approaching," Dahlia warned. "Finish them, or let's be on our way."
Drizzt considered the ragtag group for a few heartbeats, then flipped his scimitars into their scabbards. He even offered the man who'd recognized him his hand and hoisted him up to his feet.
"I've no love for the high captains of Luskin," Drizzt explained to the highwayman. "Only that fact spares you the blade this day. But know that I will be watching you, and any assault upon an innocent will be viewed as an attack upon my own body."
"And that's it, then?"
asked the woman, looking miserable and beaten.
"We're to forage and starve so as not to offend the sensibilities of the great Drizzt Do'Urden?"
Drizzt looked at her curiously, but for just a moment before he noted Dahlia's superior, knowing smile.
"I was a farmer," explained the man Drizzt had just lifted. "Right near Luskin. Goodman Stoyle's at your service."
He held out his hand, but Driz didn't take it. My family worked the land since before the fall of the host tower of the Arcane. Then why are you here? The drow asked suspiciously. Ain't no use for farms around Luskin no more, the man replied. Folks are trading for their food now, and most by ship or by the wagon like the one that just passed. And most of it's stolen food, don't ye doubt? Another man interjected. They got no patience for a farm, nor no means to protect one. Drizzt glanced over at Dahlia, who merely shrugged as if it was all quite expected. We grew it, they stole it, and burned that what they couldn't take, said Stoyles. Down the road, more of the highwaymen came into view, but only briefly before scattering into the brush, no doubt to try to flank the newcomers. Go, Drizzt bade the four, waving them away. A couple moved to do just that, one going over to help the woman to her feet and calling for the nearest horse as he did.
I would think you would offer a meal and a dry bed for the two of us for letting you go, Dahlia said to the group, drawing surprised looks from all four, and most of all from Drizzt. Weary travelers, rainy night, she went on.
Drizzt's jaw hung open, and didn't begin to close when Goodman Stoyles answered, Join us, then. We have other business, Drizzt said rather sternly, aiming his remarks squarely at Dahlia. But Dahlia just laughed and followed the four highwaymen. With a great sigh, Drizzt did too. The bandits had set up several wide lean-tos among a row of thick pines just off the road, affording them a comfortable enough camp despite the driving rain. They proved to be surprisingly hospitable, offering a warm meal and some good strong drink. Goodman Stoyles stayed with Drizzt and Dahlia through the meal and afterward, prodding Drizzt for tales of Icewind Dale, old adventures that had apparently become legendary in these parts so many years later. Drizzt had never fancied himself a storyteller, but he complied with the requests and soon found quite the audience, a dozen or so, sitting around and listening intently. Most of those drifted off to sleep as the fires burned low, but a couple remained, enjoying the banter.
"And what business might you have now that brings you south of that forsaken land?" asked one of them, a tall man named Haydencourt, after Drizzt had finished the story of battling a white dragon in an ice cave. "We're on our way to Luskin," Drizzt answered, "to inquire after some old friends."
"And then to Neverwinter Wood, eh?" Dahlia added, and Drizzt couldn't react fast enough to suppress his surprise at her inclusion of that tidbit.
There's a great battle raging there, Farmer Stoyles remarked. Neverwinter Wood? Haydencourt pressed. What would bring a drow and an—
He looked rather curiously at Dahlia, as if not quite knowing what to make of her.
A lady such as yourself to that war-scarred place.
Dahlia started to reply, but Drizzt spoke over her.
We're adventurers. It would seem that Neverwinter Wood is now a place of adventure.
He ended up by lifting his cup of brandy in a toast.
Though in truth, we haven't decided our course after Luskin, and in truth, we are not even certain that our road will take us all the way to the City of Sails. I've been thinking that it's far past time for a return to Mithril Hall.
The whole time he spoke, the drow stared intently at Dahlia, warning her to keep silent. When he looked back at Haydencourt, he noted that the man wore a smile that seemed a bit too informed for his liking.
"Call it personal," Dahlia said,
and she never stopped looking at Haydencourt. The discussion ended there abruptly, with Drizzt commenting that it was past time for them all to get some rest. As the others dispersed, Dahlia watched Haydencourt head off to his lean-to for the night. Goodman Stoyles stepped away to speak with several others of the band.
"We'll be moving tomorrow," he reported back to Drizzt a few moments later. "That wagon will soon enough reach Port Last, and we're thinking a garrison'll come looking for us. Are ye to be coming with us, then? We'd be glad to have ye along."
"No," Drizzt stated flatly, over Dahlia's opposite response.
"I cannot." "We're just surviving, is all," Stoyles said. "A man's a right to eat."
"That you didn't feel the bite of my blade is a testament that I don't disagree," Drizzt told him. "But I fear that traveling along beside you would show me choices with which I cannot agree and of which I cannot abide. Would you enter every adventure unsure of my allegiance?" Stoyles took a step back and eyed the drow. Better ye go, then.
We hope you enjoyed this free preview of Neverwinter, Neverwinter Saga, Book 2, Book 24 in the Legend of Drizzt series. To keep the story going, get the complete book today.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.